Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. We are in Hosea chapter 3, a new chapter tonight. It's only got 5 verses, so this shouldn't take very long. And about time I say that, it takes us 3 weeks. But what's happening in this chapter 3 is basically God is going to give a command similar to what he said at the beginning of the book. Hosea is going to fulfill what was said or asked to do, and then God's going to give a meaning. In the first chapter, this is similar, parallels the first chapter, except in the first chapter there was going to be 3 children were going to be born, and each of the children is going to have a meaning. So the same thing takes place. It's just that do you see my eraser? Thank you. It's just that here there's only one meaning because it's going to be go back to your wife. I'm going to read the NIV first, and then we'll look at the English Standard Version. I think you can see, you decide. The NIV kind of paraphrases a few things, kind of assumes a few things, as it often does, trying to make it more readable, more teachable. You've also got the Hebrew right there, and I've got the English Standard Version on the note. So here it is. The NIV, Hosea chapter 3. The Lord said to me. Also notice, this is going to be in first person. The first chapter is in third person, where there it's like a narrative. It's being told what took place. Hosea's writing it. We can assume Hosea's writing it, recording it. Now it switches to first person. Some people have trouble with that because, like, oh, it looks like someone's added this, or there's a disciple or somebody writing the first part. Now this is what Hosea's writing. I don't think that has to be an issue. You can consider that. You're going to see later in the book, the whole way through, starting even chapter 8 to the end, it's going to be switching back and forth. Sometimes you even are going to see Hosea talking in the third person about himself and then in the first person about himself. And then all of a sudden, it's not him. It's, as you know, it's Yahweh speaking, but it's Hosea speaking in the third person for Yahweh or in the first person for Yahweh. So this is kind of the style that the book goes in. I don't think we need to be concerned with it, especially since it comes down as a unit throughout history. There's no place where you just see chunks of it. So that's, we can assume this is all the same. And the same thing here, you're going to meet a woman in this chapter. And the choice, we talked about it early on when we started this, is this another woman? I think this is Gomer, because it has to be Gomer in the sense because he's got to go back to her and bring her back, and it represents Israel. We'll talk about that as we go. So, the Lord said to me, and here's a quote, "Go show your love to your wife again." That's the NIV, putting the word again at that place. "Though she is loved by another and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes." Now he obeys. Verse 2 is the obedience, the action. "So I bought her," which is interesting, especially if she's his wife, "for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethic of barley." Now, the 15 shekels is fine, except usually it's 30 shekels in the Bible. You see a slave is 30 shekels, and the fact that he only pays 15 shekels and adds some grain, some different measurements of grain with it, may indicate he's trying to kind of put together the money. It's not like, well, here's 30 pieces of silver. It's like, well, all I've got is this. How about can I take some of this? In fact, we'll notice the Hebrew word there when we get to it. When it says, "I bought her," it actually means to bargain, to haggle, to be in the street kind of bartering back and forth. And so it's like, well, what will you take? So he's buying her from somebody. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethic of barley. Then I told her, and barley's a low-grade grain. "Then I told her, 'You are to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or to be intimate with any man, and I will live with you.'" Verse 4. Now here's the explanation of why this all took place. "For the Israelites will live many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or idol. Afterward, the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they will come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last days. Now that's the NIV. I'm going to read now on the through the notes, the bold print on page 1, 2, and 3, and 4. Just the English Standard Version, and see if you can pick up some differences. And the Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by another man and is an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the children of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love cakes of raisins. Now, one thing you'll notice right there in the NIV, sacred raisin cakes. English Standard Version, love cakes of raisins. And if you go through the Hebrew there, there's, you see it right there, the bottom line to the left, reading the words or the sentence backwards. It says, to God's other love and the cake raisin, or the cakes of the pagans, the cakes of raisin. So there's no, the word sacred is not directly in there, as you can see, and it's not in the English Standard Version. Meaning the NIV is trying to assume it's some kind of religious ritual, and we'll talk about that. Hosea 3:2, so I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a lethic of barley. Chapter 3, verse 3 at the bottom. And I said to her, you must dwell as mine for many days. You shall not play the whore or belong to another man. So will I also be to you. And then verse 4, and here's the reason. For the children of Israel shall dwell many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or pillar, without ephod or household gods. Again, what's interesting about that is there is within Israel a sacrifice and ephod, but there is no pillar or household gods. So it appears there's no, you know, it could be no religious rituals of the Hebrews or even any pagans. But there it is. And verse 5 in the English Standard Version, afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. And it's interesting, David is thrown in there. And they shall come in fear to the Lord and to his goodness in the latter days. Again, like there's like a true full commitment right there. So with that being said, we're going to just mention a few things. At the top of page 1 of the notes, the overview of the chapter, I've got that written on the board. I already talked about it, the command, the fulfillment, and then the explanation. It's exactly the same pattern you see in chapters 1 and 2 where he's given, told to do something, he does it, and then we have a lot of explanation of why it was done, where God is definitely taking and combining Gomer with Israel and Hosea as Yahweh in these relationships. The explanations were longer. I said all that. There's only one act. Mentioned the first and second person. And now the notes here. Looking at the notes on the bottom, the literal reading, point two, the literal reading could be this. And the Lord said to me again. And that is the first thing we're going to mention here is that word again. Because when you compare, the word again can say love your wife again, or go to her and love her again, or love a woman again, go again and love the woman. Or it could be this is the Lord is going to speak. It could be talking about speaking. And again, you can look at it either way, but if you begin the book in chapter 1, verse 2 in Hosea, when the Lord began to speak through Hosea, and here's what he began to speak, and that's chapter 1 and 2. Now, chapter 3 is some consider, and I don't think it's a good consideration, but it's worth mentioning, that chapter 3 is nothing more than just a rehashing of what took place in chapter 1, where the Lord says, go show your love to this woman. But I think, and I think you would agree, is that this is just the continuation of the story. For him to have a wife, her go astray, and be brought back is what's going to happen to Israel. And so when it says the word again, is this is the Lord speaking again. The first time when the Lord began to speak, now he's speaking again, and this is now the rest of the story. So it's worth considering that word. Again, it could go either way, and you see NIV and English Standard put it with going again, love a woman, I like to consider this at least because it fits there also. Commentators say the Lord began to speak, and now he speaks a second time, and this is the second act of the play. The first two chapters are all about what he said the first time and the fallout. So that's that point. The Hebrew does not say your wife. And you can see that in the words right there. I'm looking at the Hebrew text there. I'm reading from the top line across. And said Yahweh to me again. There, see right there's the word in the Hebrew. Said Yahweh to me again. Now again, you can read that with Yahweh said, or you can read it where it's going. Again, go love, and there's the Hebrew word translated in the English, a woman loved by, who is loved by, a lover. So this is, the second thing he's saying to him is go to a woman, and this woman is just a woman, or it could be wife. So this is, this woman, or this wife, is loved by another, meaning she is loved, a woman loved by another man, or she is a wife of another man, or she is Hosea's wife, loved by a different man. I think we can see in this next chapter, next verse, when he begins talking about her, that this is his wife. The way the Hebrew's written, and you don't necessarily see it in the English, but I've got a note on there. Point four on page two. Verse 3:2 uses the phrase, I procured her, or bought her, which indicates it was not just any wife, but it was her. The idea there is it's not just any woman or somebody's wife. It's her, and the way it's written in the Hebrew, it's a specific woman, which in context could only be Gomer. So he is to go, and again, it would make no sense, as you can admit, it would make no sense for it to say, go to another man's wife and love her. That would not make any sense. That'd make Hosea an adulterer. So this woman is Gomer. It's not specified in this first verse when it just says love a woman, but it does come up later that this woman would have to be Gomer. Point five on page two, this woman is clearly an adulteress since it says in the text. And so it's not like Hosea is going to go commit adultery with another man's wife and make her an adulteress. This is his wife, Gomer. Now remember, and this is going to play out in these next verses, he has sent her away. He sent her away. She thought all of her success, she'd be fine and welcomed by the lovers, and she'd be successful. And you can see when we get into this that she's not. She's apparently in slavery. Just like God is sending Israel away. They think all the Baals are taking care of Israel. God says, okay, fine. I'm going to take away everything I've given you, all my provisions, I'm going to take them back and leave you in the wilderness. And in the wilderness, you're going to become desperate, and then I'm going to come speak kindly to you, and you'll realize that you want to come back. And so that's what God has been doing, is doing through history, because it says in latter days, this will not be solved for Israel until yet in the future. They're still in this wilderness phase, and we can look at that again. So basically, Gomer has already been sent away. She is in the wilderness. She thought her lovers would provide for her, but it's really Hosea who's taking care of her. And now she's, as we can assume, a lot of these things I'm assuming, but she's going to be purchased by Hosea, which means she apparently has gone into some state where she's owned by somebody. It's probably not another man. Another man hasn't married her because you don't see people buying wives from other men. So she's probably in some kind of state of slavery. She probably got so far off in the wilderness that Hosea sent her into that her lovers didn't come through for her. She needs money. She needs to survive. And a woman in this culture alone with no property, no business, no family, no lovers that are supporting her. She thought she could live off just the favors of her lovers. But they've let her go. And she now is destitute, so her only action is some kind of slavery. And so she's now owned by somebody, probably not a husband, but has something that someone owns her, that she owes them something, that now Hosea has to purchase her and buy her back. So she has gone off into the wilderness, is destitute, and Homer goes off and is going to buy her back. And so she has gone into adultery. It says, I'm looking at this right here, show her love to her again. The word again is mentioned there. I explained that. But the word love needs to be considered here because it says love her and that she is loved by another. So at first you could think of some kind of emotion. You know, he has an emotional connection, and we'd like to think that Hosea has some emotional connection to her, and I think he does. He's in a covenant with her. But these other men that love her, they do not. It's not emotional. This word love is referring to sexual activity, as you can see right here. The adulteress, love her as the Lord loves Israel, because that's not what it's referring to there, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisins. So it says, show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another. She is in a relationship with another that is not just emotional. There's a relationship taking place, sexual, and that's going to come up later with Hosea also, because when you get to these words right here, it says in chapter 4, verse 1, verse 3, then I told her, you are to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. There's going to come a time, because she's been out and she's been sexually active with other men, she's going to come in, and it's going to be this time of purification, it appears. And that's what that many days is referring to. Many days. It doesn't just say, I don't think it means just you're going to live with me many days, you can live with me a long, long time. It means you're going to come back and be with me, and it's going to be a time of purification. It's going to be probation. It's going to be a time where we're going to live together until things normalize. There's going to be no sexual interaction. You're going to live with me many days. You're not going to go to other people, other men. You're going to stay with me. It says, then I told her, you must live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. And I think what they're indicating here is that after so many days of whatever this is, then they will then come back into a marriage relationship, and their marriage will be normalized again, which is exactly what's going to be seen here in chapter 4 and 5 with Israel. For the Israelites will live many days, many days. Once they're sent to the wilderness, they're going to have to go through this purification process many days without king or prince. And that's where they're at right now since the days that, you know, Israel was sent away and then Jerusalem fell. They've been without king since 722 in Israel, 586 in Judah, B.C. That's how long they've been without king or prince. They do not have a normal relationship in the theocracy that God set up. They are not a theocracy. There's not a king on the throne that God is overseeing. They are still God's people, but they're in this time of purification. They've gone to the wilderness. They've come back, but they're going to have to live many days without a prince or a king in a normal relationship like God set up with Israel. But goes on, without sacrifice or sacred stone. And that's both, again, how would you interpret? They're going to be going out without. Like Hosea and Gomer are going to be living together for many days, waiting until the relationship is normalized. Israel's going to be without sacrifice, without sacred stone, without ephod or without idol. You're going to have none of these things. And you can consider the fact right now that even now they are in Jerusalem, but they can't get to the Temple Mount. They can go up there and sometimes they can pray, and a lot of times they can't pray. There's rules, and you can watch that on the news, watch it on different updates. Riots will break out. Jews can't go up there and pray. Muslims can go up there and pray, but Jews sometimes have a hard time even visiting, and they definitely can't go up there and be in a state of prayer. That's why they pray at the Western Wall. If they could go up on the Temple Mount and get close to where they thought the temple was, or get close to some place closer, they would go there. But the reason they're at the Western Wall is that's the only place they don't get some kind of political blowback for praying. There's a place in the Western Wall tunnels. If you go here to the Temple Mount, this is the south side. There's steps down here, the ceremonial steps coming up onto the Temple Mount. The Dome of the Rock is right here. Here's the Western Wall right about here in the Prayer Plaza. You know, that it's been developed since 1967. Before that, this was all full of buildings. There was buildings in here, and there was just an alley. There's just a little roadway. So there'd be a building here and a building here, and they'd have to go into this alley, and they'd pray at this western wall. In 67, when they had the war of 67, they reconquered or took control of this. They bulldozed these houses, shacks, whatever was there, not making, you know, of course, that was a violation, but that they controlled it. And they built what is now the Western Wall Plaza, which is a pavement right here where there's Jews can come up here and pray. But you see how far, if this is where the Dome of the Ark of the Covenant sat, they're as close as they can get, unless you go in the Western Wall tunnels, which you can go in through here, go down and walk along the wall, down underground, even going down to the first century pavement. You can see the first century pavement. If you get way down here, the pavement, you can see where it runs this way, and you can see the pillars of what was a first century road. They're buried. You can see them there. And there used to be a road going down this way, and you can see the pavement. You can walk on the pavement, but it hasn't been excavated this way yet. You could continue to excavate this way. So you're on the first century pavement, but it's all covered up. Anyway, when you get right here, there will be somebody or people, sometimes, you know, two or three people, because right here praying, right there, because that is actually the closest place they can come and pray and be close to the holy place. And so when you go down this Western Wall Tunnel, you're walking underground, you can see these huge stones of the Temple Mound right here, the retaining wall. There'll be somebody praying right here. So nonetheless, Israel is, in a sense, still in this place where they don't have a king, they don't have a prince, they do not have the ephod, the priesthood's not working, there's no sacrifice. They're still in this place of many days, of, in a sense, if you go back to the idea of purification, they're on a time waiting until they're restored. And now they're not restored yet. And Hosea is acting this out with Gomer, if you want to read it that way. Again, we're dealing with scanty information. I'm going to read the NIV again. The Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife again. Again, show your love, that would mean go bring her back into your home. It's going to mean a normal relationship. They're going to have a normal relationship. When we say normal, that would include some kind of sexual encounter. Love with another, though she is in love with another, though she's right now being intimate with another, bring her home, and she is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites. He wants to restore a normal relationship. Though they turn to other gods and love the raised, sacred raisin cakes. I haven't talked about the sacred raisin cakes. I skipped that. Okay, go back on page 2, and that's point 9. You can see that the word sacred is not in the text, in the Hebrew or in the English standard. It's here, and that's one of the paraphrases that they're putting in there. They assume, and it's not a bad assumption, you can see places where in Jeremiah they made cakes for Asherah, our Asherah. And so there is a place where they could make some kind of cakes that honor the gods with some kind of baked goods. But if I can build on this, I've got these things written down. 9, love the sacred raisin cakes in NIV is a paraphrase. Point A, sacred is not in the text. Point B, Israelites, a better translation would simply be Israelites, they love raisin cakes. Now, there's raisin. Every time I wrote raisin when I was typing the notes, it spell checked it, so I think I spelled it right there. They love raisin cakes. In 2 Samuel 6:19, David distributes raisin cakes to the people. He gives them several desserts. When he brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, they were celebrating, and he gave everybody treats. It's like giving everybody bread or giving everybody free drinks, or in his case, he gave everybody raisin cakes. So that raisin cakes at that point was not anything cultish or pagan. It was a dessert. It was a pleasantry that they had. In 1 Samuel 30, verse 12, you can see now the raisin cake. First, they were a gift to the people, celebration. Now they're going to be a source of energy provided for the, you know, they need energy. They go for the raisin cakes, or raisins were a source of energy. And then we come to Song of Solomon. And the lovers, they're talking about raisin cakes. And the best thing that you can see here, and it plays into our account here, if you want to go with it, with the ideal of energy, Song of Solomon. Yeah, let me go read it to you. Song of Songs. It was a seen as just like the mandrakes. You remember the mandrakes of Jacob's day when Leah had her son went out and found mandrakes, brought them back home, says, "Mom, I've got these mandrakes." And Rebecca wanted the mandrakes and so that she could sleep with Jacob and become pregnant. They saw the mandrakes as a form of a fertility. That was their culture. If it was true or not, that doesn't seem to be the issue scientifically, but that's what they believe. And so she was willing to barter for these mandrakes. Now, in Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 5, I'm going to begin reading chapter 2, verse 2 of Song of Songs. "Like a lily among the thorns is my darling among the maidens." Okay, so everybody, all the other women are like thorns. "You look like a lily, darling." She replies, "Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He has taken me to the banquet hall, and his banner," and there's his banner over me is love. Literally, it says he's taken me to the house of wine. And his banner over me is love. I'm looking at my notes right here when I taught through this. The word banner is an Akkadian word, which means intention. The man's intention in the wine house is love. So in other words, he's taken her to the wine house, and his banner over her, it sounds nice, but his intentions for her is love. And we're in the context of Song of Songs, which is very clearly a sexual. And we've went through this. Watch this, verse 5. You see the context. There is like an apple tree. She's like a lily among the thorns. "I delight to sit in his shade. His fruit is sweet. He's taken me to the banquet hall, the house of wine. His intention for me is love." And that's not an emotional thing. That is activity. And then verse 5. Here it is. "Strengthen me with raisins. Refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love." And if you read that in context, "I am worn out from love, love making. I need raisins and apples to give me energy for this continuation in this sensual activity." Yes, if you want to teach through Song of Songs again, that's exactly what it means. And that is the context here. It's very healthy, especially in our context, between a male and a female to be having this kind of activity. That's normal. Outside of a male and female relationship, it's abnormal, weird, perversion, not in tune with reality. There's a whole sermon there, but this is exactly what is being said there. With that context, we go back to Hosea 3. You don't have to accept this, but there's something about raisins, and there's something about raisin cakes, and they're not going to, it says right here that they love the raisin cakes. And this would be an indication that they're involved in the cults, the pagan worship, the Baals, which were fertility cults, which involved sexual activity. They had temple prostitutes. And the raisin cakes were understood then, if this is true, to be a source of maintaining your worship, maintaining your activity in the cults, in the temple of the pagan gods. And that's what it says right here. And again, the context, love your wife. She's loved by another. The Lord loves Israel, though they go to other gods. And what are they doing with the other gods? They love the raisin cakes. They go to the other gods and they reload. It's like the blue pill or something. It's like they reload and they go after it again in this place right here with the other gods. And so he's saying this in a sense that that's their problem. And so, the context is there with Hosea and Gomer and with the pagan worship, and the Lord wants to restore them. So that's the raisin cakes. You could say, and you can see why the NIV would put in there sacred raisin cakes, because it's part of the sacred worship of the pagan gods, but that's, you know, that word's not there. And my explanation, it's look what I'm working with. We're working with this right here, and love the sacred raisin cakes, or and love the raisin cakes. We got the idea that David handed them as gifts. They're a source of energy. They thought they're like an energy protein drink. And we see them in the Song of Songs when they are in a situation where they're in a sensual activity and they want to continue. Nonetheless, I'm in chapter 3, verse 2 at the bottom of page 2. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a lethic of barley. The fact, like I said before, that he is using 15 shekels and is using some grain, some barley, would equal the price. That's an unusual, I mean, not, it doesn't have to be, but it's, you got some coins, you've got some grain. I know when I've been there at different places in my life or just different times of locations, I mean, sometimes you've got like, you've got your debit card, and then you got a debit card, you can get, okay, then I'm going to pay the rest in cash. I also got some pop cans. And I remember many times in life having going to the store and trying to put stuff together so you could pay for the groceries. And so this would be similar to that. That's not necessarily what it means, but there it is. The slave, the price of a slave at this time and many times in the writings of the pagans, in the writings of Scripture, is 30 pieces of shekels. You can see it's 30 shekels. Or 30 pieces of silver. You can see this in the story of Joseph. You see this in the law. You can see this in the writings of the people of that culture. That matches. But now he's paying 15. Why? Because she's cheap. If she's cheap, then why are you throwing in maybe as much as 6 bushels of grain? He's coming up with a large amount of grain to go with the 15 shekels to pay this price for her. So it would appear that he's scrounging together money. He's putting his change, his dollars, usually what he's got left on his debit card or his gift card or whatever, and purchasing her. And the fact that she is, and again, she is purchased. It means she was bought. How do we know she was bought? That there was an owner, there's someone that was selling her, is because we've got the price. Someone owned her. Now, meaning she either owed them money, she had sold herself to them. Somebody has the right to sell Gomer. Again, it'd be strange to say it's a husband because Hosea is the husband, and there's no examples of husbands selling their wives back and forth. But there is examples of someone owning someone because of indentured servanthood being, you know, they owe me this money. You can have her, but I need this from her. And so Hosea pays the price and purchase her, likely out of slavery. Now, you understand how many things I'm reading into the text. I'm reading into the text here that he's scrounging things together, scrounging coins and grain to purchase her, which is interesting because if that's the case, God tells him to do something. It's like, well, where's the money? It's like he's got to figure it out. I'm also, we talked about the raisin cakes. What does raisin cakes mean? It just says they love the raisin cakes. I mean, they love desserts. They just keep eating desserts. Is there a meaning? I gave you a meaning. I read that meaning into the text. We don't know. I don't know. I mean, that would make sense. It fits the context. But I'm pretty sure this is Gomer. I'm pretty sure she's involved with another man, sexually active. Now this other man, this other person, someone owns her because there was money that was paid. She's in some kind of debt or is owned. Slavery, what kind of slavery? It could be the temple prostitute, a temple slavery. Some people go there, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think he's buying her from a temple. I think she went off. I think what happened, he took her, and you want to be out like this? Sent her off like Israel's being sent to the wilderness. She's now destitute. She's got to get something, make a living. She's got to provide for herself, and she ends up in some kind of slavery in the wilderness. That's where Hosea comes in, says, I'll pay the price. I'll buy her back and bring her back, and we'll have a normal relationship. And that's exactly what God has said he was going to do. I'm going to send them off. There'll be nothing there for them. They'll be destitute. And then I'll go speak kindly to them, and they will want to be with me because I can save them from the disaster. In other words, they do not know how bad it is without Yahweh until Yahweh shows them. That's how bad it is. And now what he's doing in history, again, beginning in 722 or 586, if you want to add that in there, 586 BC. He sent them off, and he sent them off, and they've gone through a period of things, including, you know, rebuilding the temple. Jesus came, the temple was destroyed again, and they're still in this waiting. They're still waiting. They have no king, they have no prince, they have no sacrifice, they are nothing. They're just waiting, kind of in this state of just nothingness, of just we're waiting for something to happen. And that's interesting to see them negotiating over in Israel right now, trying to make peace in the Middle East. And it's always interesting to watch, and it's always a noble thing to do. But they're messing with this time period right here. It's like, we got a great idea. We got the plan of the century. We've got this idea. It's like, do you understand? This is under divine command. They have no prince. They have no king. They have no sacrifice. They're there until I'm ready. And so they're still in this purification process of waiting. You see what I'm saying? I mean, so it's like, you're trying to move an immovable object. Well, it's the Palestinians, it's the Arabs, it's the Jews, it's the Democrats, the conservatives, it's Russia, it's Germany, it's European. It's like, it's the Word of God. There's nothing going to happen until, well, it tells you, until the latter days when Yahweh and David, which is a verse about the Messiah, then we'll bring them back and we'll have a normal relationship. But nonetheless, point four under at the bottom of page 2.4, it says, I bought her means that it says, okay, bought means that she was purchased. Bought includes the Hebrew ideal of haggling, bartering, and negotiation in the street. So, which also would add to the fact that he didn't just walk up and say, how much for, and gave him the money. They say, we need 30 pieces of silver. I don't have, I'm ad-libbing here. I've only got 15, but I can also give you some grain. Well, I'm going to need, you know, Homer and a, what is it, a Homer and a, I'm looking for it here, yeah, Lethic, which would be a Homer's like 10 bushels, and then a Lethic would be like half of that, if that's the case. So 15 shekels plus one Homer plus the 10 bushels would equal about 30 pieces of silver, apparently, and that's what they go for. And that's the end of that notes right there. Again, we don't know for sure, but I would think that she's in slavery. And then now we go to the next place. Now he explains. In verse 3, then I told her, you are to live with me many days. And I think that's referring to many days as you're going to come in and live with me into a test period, just like Israel's going to go through this period. There is going to be a normal relationship restored. Israel right here is going after foreign gods. They're going to be sent into the wilderness, and then they're going to be brought back, but there's going to be many days that they're going to be waiting until they're in a normal relationship with Yahweh again. Just like Gomer was here, she is sent to the wilderness. He buys her back. She's bought. And now she's going to live with him for many days, but we're not going to have a normal relationship until he says right here, many days you must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. In other words, when I decide at the right time, I will then bring you back to me in a normal marriage relationship. And I think this, as you know, this whole book, Gomer and Hosea parallel what's happening with Yahweh and Israel. And so that would be a way of explaining that. That's what I write there on page 3. The point, many days may refer to a prohibition period where they lived together without sexual relations, kind of a process of purification. And then chapter 3, verse 4 on page 3. For the children of Israel shall dwell many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or pillar. A pillar would be an Asherah pole, which stood beside a Baal stone. A sacrifice could be just their rituals on the Temple Mount. Without ephod, which would speak of the high priest activity on the Temple Mount, or household gods. You can't go to the temple, but you're also not going to be going in having household gods. That's kind of where they're at. They're at this place right now in time where Israel, they can't go to the temple, but they're certainly not going to go back to their houses and have household gods. So they're kind of like in limbo. They can't go to the Temple Mount and follow the priest, the ephod. They can't offer sacrifices, but they can't go back to their home and have their little household gods and their Asherah poles. They're kind of like just waiting. It's like you can't go to this man. You can't go back to your adulterous lifestyle. You can't be a prostitute. but you can't come live with me yet. You're just here waiting. And I think that's what's taking place right here. She's brought back, but we're not going to be intimate. We've got to wait. I want to leave you here. They're brought back. They're here. They're waiting. But they're not going to go back to idolatry. But they can't go into the kingdom. They're waiting. So Gomer's waiting. Israel's waiting. How long will they wait? Page 4 of the notes right here. Chapter 3, verse 5. Afterward, after this period of waiting, and you can do what you want with this, but it all ends up at the right place. After this period of waiting, this long period, whatever it is, if it refers to what's going on today, what went on 300 years, what's going to happen in 400 years, whatever this is, there is a day coming. We all know this is what the Bible is based on. This, it says, afterward, after this period, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they shall come in fear to the Lord and to his goodness in the latter days. So some key words here is the words afterward, meaning after this period of going through this waiting, they're going to come, they're going to seek Yahweh. They're waiting, they're looking. And again, Gomer, we're done talking about her, but how did she respond to Hosea? I mean, we don't know. We can make assumptions, but we don't know. Was she excited to be back? I think she was excited not to have to be a slave. I think she was excited to have food on the table. I think it's like, well, this is better than being in the wilderness. We know that for sure. Where they ended up, I don't know. Did they end up going to Judah together after Israel fell? We don't know these things. But as far as this story, after this period of being in the wilderness and being brought back, and this period without the temple, without pagan worship, they're just waiting, they will seek Yahweh. They shall return and seek the Lord their God. And it mentions David, their king. Now, the phrase David, their king, you can see David's name popping up in Ezekiel, especially, you know, in this time. But probably the reference to David is going to be a reference to the Christ, the Messiah, the one who's going to sit on the throne forever. So it says David here, they don't necessarily mean, or Hosea doesn't necessarily, or the Lord doesn't necessarily mean David the man, although he will be resurrected, he will be in the kingdom. There will be a place, just like, you know, we'll have places of honor and rewards. David will have his place. This is probably a reference to Christ, meaning the kingdom. And again, the idea that David is mentioned, we're talking about a future day in the kingdom, and they shall come in fear to the Lord and to his goodness, and this is all going to say right here, in the latter days or in the last days. And in the notes there, point 3, last days or latter days is an eschatological and means at the end of days, meaning right here at the end, they'll come back to the Lord, they'll seek him, it's time, Yahweh will be there, the Messiah will be there, and it will take place in the last of days when they come into the kingdom. And so this is, again, Hosea is just living these things out. I would assume, as we've said before, everybody is watching Hosea and his wife. They're watching Hosea, and he's out in the streets bartering, trying to buy this woman out of slavery. Isn't that your wife you sent away? I mean, it's got to be happening. Why are you buying her back? Because this is, again, I don't want to say useless, but it's the point of this is it's speaking to Israel. So it can't be happening over here in a corner, and then he writes it down in a little bit of a scroll somewhere, and it just keeps handed down. No one ever reads it. I would assume this is happening right in front of the people. He's got to go publicly out here and barter in the streets. Can't secretly just, here's 30 pieces of silver, I'll take her back. He's like, I need 30. I've only got 15. And people are watching this, him buying his wife out of slavery and come back. And they may have known this stipulation, because the point, whole thing is, it's not just for Hosea to know. I mean, there's value in me knowing this, or you knowing this, or Hosea knowing this information. But Hosea is a prophet. It's not just for Hosea to say, oh, I know why I had to do this. This is what's going to happen to Israel. It's got to be something. And if it's just information, if we just want, you know, a PowerPoint, if we just want it laid out in the steps of what's going to take place, we've got prophets that just were given information. Here's the information. Daniel didn't have to go through actions. These are just, here's the information. He recorded, sealed it up in a scroll. But Hosea is living it. People are watching Hosea and his wife, Hosea and his children. He's giving them names that people are calling them by these names. Why do you call your child that? Why are you buying your wife out of slavery? Because this, because everything that we are doing here is this family is going to happen to Israel. So I would think that this has to be something that people are watching and aware of, which gives us a little more insight. Now understand, I said a lot of words. I talked a while, about five verses, with look how little information we've got. So I do understand that, I can read it again. I'm going to read it right here out of the English Standard again, and I'll be done. So this is all we really know. This is what we know. You heard me talk. And the Lord said to me, go again. Or the Lord said to me again, love a woman. Singular, that's just any wife. A wife. A woman. Who is loved by another man. Now, he's probably not telling him to go love someone else's wife. And this love is some kind of active, not just emotional. And is an adulteress. So the wife is already an adulteress, which means she's with another man already. Which means the only way to be right is if Hosea was going to his wife, who's the adulteress. Even as the Lord loves the children of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love cakes of raisins. All right, they love the cakes of raisins. They love desserts. And again, I explained that. It's probably how they worship their other gods. So I bought her. I went, found her. I'm going to love her again. So I've got to bring her into my home. I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a lethic of barley. And even it's like, what does that mean? Well, it might mean he's trying to put the money together. And I said to her, once he's got her now, he paid for her, he's got her now, they're walking back to the house, or here's the deal. You must dwell as mine for many days. I didn't buy you to be a prostitute. I bought you to be with me, and we're going to live together many days. We're going to establish a normal relationship. You shall not play the whore or belong to another man. So when that's done, I will also be to you. We will then now, I will come to you and be your husband. But not today. We're going to go through this process. And the reason why this is, chapter 3, verse 4, why? For the children of Israel shall dwell many days. They're going to be brought back, but they're not going to be given a king or a prince. That's not going to take place until later. They'll have no sacrifice or no pagan pillars. They'll have no priestly ephod, no household gods during this time of waiting. But afterwards, when the waiting is done, the time where they have no ephod, no gods, no anything, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God. They will be at the right place in a right relationship standing. And David their king, they'll seek the Messiah. They'll seek, again, that would be Jesus Christ. There's a day coming where they'll seek the Lord their God, but also the correct Messiah. And they shall come in fear of the Lord and to His goodness, and this will happen in the latter days, the end days, the days of the end. Meaning, don't look for it during some negotiation period, although there's nothing wrong with negotiating. It's going to happen at the right time. So anyway, there's chapter 3, verse 5. Now that is, in a sense, the end of Gomer and Hosea's story. We've got the rest of the book now, quite lengthy, as far as, the minor prophets. And in chapter 4 begins, hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites. Now we've got Hosea speak. He's living it, and now he's going to start bringing the message to them, and you're going to have just a series of messages throughout this that were collected. Are there any questions or comments about, again, I said a lot of things. You do not have to accept them, but I do like, it does make, it's nice when it makes some kind of sense and has a storyline to it. Corrections, comments? Yes, sir. That's what I would, and the reason I can say that, with any kind of confidence is because we're looking at history. And again, I write the number. This, they fell in 722, Jerusalem, or Babylon, 586 BC. There's that time they go into captivity and they come back for a while. They rebuild the temple, but that's to bring Jesus to fulfill that. And then right after Jesus dies, 40 years, the temple's destroyed, they're right back to this place. This was like a little bleep in history to get the Messiah to come back to his people. And now they're right back here, Roman dispersion, and now they're back to right where they were. And again, even when Jesus was there, they had a temple, but they didn't have the ark. They had some rituals, but they were still knew that they were still waiting for this. And so the later days, that's not going to be fulfilled. This is not going to happen until Jesus comes back, until the Messiah, the King, the Son of David comes. And that's what we're, the church is waiting for this, and Israel's still waiting. It's just that they've been waiting since 722. So this whole time, you know, they've been waiting for this, and so there's really no time that that's ever been fulfilled. That's what I'm, so I'm looking at this period right here. Part of this would be the Jewish time in the wilderness, and part of this time is where they're going to just be waiting with nothing, waiting. And interestingly, when Jesus, in this final day, we got several indications from Paul to Zechariah that Israel will look on him, the one they pierced, and weep for him as an only child, and all Israel will be saved. I mean, even Revelation talks about this, and they're going to turn to the Lord. They're going to turn to Jesus Christ. And that's, you can have Jews individually coming out and accepting Christ, because they're just joining the church, you know, like Paul or Peter or any Jews today. But there's a day coming where there's going to be a national coming to the Lord, Zechariah, Romans, Revelation. So yeah, I think this waiting period is, the wilderness and waiting period is from 722, 586 until this takes place. So yes, wherever we're at, you know, we can put, we are, you are here. So again, you know, Trump's over there making a peace treaty. Clinton was over there making a peace treaty. You know, everybody's making a peace treaty. And that's good. I mean, that's good for common politics, you know, the age of, that we're living in. But you're not going to establish, you're just setting the stage for the final days, if that makes sense. And so it's interesting, and when you put it like this, you start seeing all these books all just stacking up, saying the same thing. You read this randomly, it's like, what's he talking about? Same thing Isaiah was talking about, the same thing Jesus was talking about, the same thing Paul, Revelation, John was talking about. We're waiting for this. Any other thoughts? Otherwise, I'll pray and we can go. Father, we do thank you again for your truth. We thank you for the opportunity to hear these things. We ask that we would honor your word, that we would honor your spirit and walk in the ways you've showed us at this time in history, that we may be a true witness as we wait for the coming of your kingdom. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.